Back together again with you on a Monday, April 18th, the 2022 edition of Connecticut Today, where we spoke with R.J. Hallman from the Federation for American Immigration Reform on the scheduled repeal of Title 42 next month at the U.S. southern border. GOP State Rep. Holly Cheesman, who's the ranking member on the General Assembly's Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, joined us to chat about the proposed Connecticut State employee contract. Going to talk a little immigration first before we go back to open phones later in the hour. You know, you're probably seeing this term pop up now over the past couple of weeks. Title 42. You're like, Title 42? What is that? Is that a new indie rock band? My son would tell me about that. Is that a new movie? You know, it's George Clooney in Title 42. No. It is a health-based immigration policy that's been around for decades. President Trump put it into effect, but it's going to end in a few weeks. What's going to happen at the southern border? R.J. Hallman is the guest. He represents the organization FAIR, Federation on American Immigration Reform. We're going to talk about that. R.J., hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Title 42, R.J. Now, you and I follow this stuff. You do it for a living, but, you know, we're seeing this pop up more and more in the media. First of all, R.J., explain why people should be interested in this. Where does Title 42 come from, and what did former President Trump do with it?
Well, you know, Title 42 is a very simple thing. And I mean, the Biden administration's decision to end it without a backup plan in place is just another example of their contempt for public health, safety, and national sovereignty. And it's an unprecedented invitation to chaos at the border. But again, Title 42 is simple, all right? It was a public health authority first implemented by President Trump, and all it does is allow federal immigration officials to quickly return illegal aliens to their native countries in order to protect Americans from illnesses, diseases, and viruses like COVID-19. Now, again, things are getting better around the country. Obviously, it's great to see a judge in Florida strike the mask mandate down on public transportation. But again, the Biden administration still sees the pandemic existing on many fronts. They were the ones who just extended that mask mandate for American travelers. They did a student loan pause citing the COVID-19 pandemic. But suddenly, when the crisis is at the border that still has not ended, we're already seeing numbers that are highest ever in the Biden administration. The March numbers that were leaked have it around 220,000, which would be the highest number since 2000. So why is the pandemic still existing in other areas, but it doesn't exist down at the border? I think we all know why. The Biden administration's border crisis is by design. They want more people to come here from all over the world and be quickly processed into the country to solidify political control for decades to come. But again, you know, the Democrats, a lot of Democrats that are up for re-election in 2022, with possibly one of the worst scenarios I think a president has ever faced politically in his first term, they're urging him to backtrack. But again, the Biden administration is staying firm. It looks like Title 42 will still end on May 23rd, triggering probably the most unprecedented wave of migrants that our southern border has ever seen.
All right, RJ, hang on. We'll get more into that. And yeah, there are some Democrats who are saying, hey, time out on this. More with RJ Hallman from FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. First, though, traffic and weather together as we continue 336 on WICC. Title 42, we're talking about that, a longstanding U.S. immigration policy that was invoked by former President Trump during the beginning and the middle part of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now it's going to be deactivated, shall we say, on May the 23rd. And a lot of folks, including a lot of Democrats, say this is probably not the best thing to do at this time, especially with an election coming up, with concerns from the border security folks. And R.J. Hallman joins us. A few more minutes with him from FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Hey, RJ, to your point before the break, yeah, and you know, I immerse myself in this as much as I can. I thought I saw that there may be as many as 20 members of Congress on the Democratic side, some of them very senior, some of them with a lot of pull, saying, hey, you can't do this. This is going to be visually and logistically a nightmare. I wonder if the White House will heed their request to hold off on this for 2 or 3 months or not. What do you think?
Well, I mean, they're pretending they care about the border. You know, don't fall for it. I mean, that's what we're trying to tell people around the country. I mean, the question is, all they're saying is don't end Title 42 until you have an actual plan in place. Well, what is their plan? I mean, are they advocating for actual policies and programs to deter illegal migration if Title 42 isn't in place? Or are they quietly trying to pave the pathway for massive expansions in both the number, method, and ease by which migrants can come to and remain in the United States? But if you really look closely, again, at their quotes, the press releases, and letters, one thing is clear, and that's that their plan is to process every migrant in the impending wave smoothly and efficiently. And you have all these asylum officers with rubber stamps waiting, and you have buses and NGOs ready to transport all these illegal aliens into American communities. I mean, the fact is this: not a single Democratic lawmaker has called on, you know, the Biden administration to reinstate effective Trump policies that they got rid of in the first 100 days. They haven't urged the administration to backtrack on their radical asylum system. None of them have attacked the complete and utter dismantling of immigration enforcement in the interior. So none of them really cared about what was happening at the border until it became a political liability. And again, all of their solutions, or even what they're asking for, would facilitate, not prevent, again, the endless, unprecedented flow of illegal migrants that we're expecting the moment Title 42 ends. So again, just I urge everybody to wake up. Democrats don't want to stop the impending wave. They just want them to remain in America forever.
And the number, RJ, that's getting tossed around, I mean, on the low end, I saw 17 to 18,000 a day. On the high end, upwards or maybe over 20,000 people a day. I mean, maybe this is a rhetorical question, RJ, but how can our Border Patrol folks and our customs folks, how can they handle it? Except like you say, just rubber stamp, boom, go ahead, walk this way, yeah. Here you go. I mean, how 20,000 people a day? Now, yeah, okay, but it's not a concert. You're not going to an arena where you're just letting people in or not supposed to. How are they going to explain that?
We don't know, and neither does the Biden administration. Again, I mean, U.S. Customs and Border Protection may as well change their name to U.S. Customs and Border Processing under Biden. I mean, that's all they care about. I mean, if you would have told me, I mean, we were at about 7,000, 8,000 encounters per day. And keep in mind, those aren't the people that get away. The gotaways are a component that we only can estimate. But again, if you would have told me a year ago that we'd be at where we currently are now, I'd be shocked. But the fact that, as you said, that they're thinking, and these are people under Biden. These aren't numbers that groups like us are coming up with based on our analysis. These are the actual law enforcement officials that aren't political, that the Biden administration has completely manipulated and undercut their entire, you know, organizational objectives. They're the ones who are saying, hey, guys, we might want to backtrack here. We could have a million people coming across our border in 6 weeks. And as you said, the Border Patrol can't do this. They don't have the rank and file officials to be able to process these people. And the most dangerous thing here is the moment you pull any Border Patrol officers from the front lines on the border where they actually enforce the laws, they seize drugs, they save people from human smuggling and trafficking, and you have them just processing and rubber stamping people, you're going to cause more drugs to flow into the country and more criminals to be successful, and it's going to make the American people less safe. That's why we say under the Biden administration, every state is now a border state.
And RJ, to me, it sounds almost like a military where you've got, you know, 10,000 military people, enlisted men and women, and you say, oh, by the way, the Army that we're going to be facing in a couple of days, they have 40,000, but go ahead, go get them. We know you can do it. I mean, I can imagine, RJ, the frustration of the good men and women who, and we hear from them a lot in some outlets, that are on the border trying to do this. I can imagine the frustration that they must feel on a daily basis.
Yeah, you know, morale is as low as it's ever been. And I know it's good to see some of these Border Patrol officers kind of go out in public and make their voices heard, both by giving the general public, you know, much needed information that the Biden administration is trying to keep under wraps. And they're actually, as we've seen in videos, they're making their voices heard to Secretary Mayorkas and other Biden administration officials when they actually meet with them, when they rarely go down to the border. But again, you know, even if you look, the Biden administration still tries to tout, oh, we have the back of our local law of our Border Patrol officers and everything. We tried to get them a pay raise in the most recent $1.4 trillion government funding bill. Well, if you look at that government funding bill, there's language in there that says they can't hire any more ICE agents or actual Border Patrol officers. The only more people they can hire are called new Border Patrol processing officers. Again, because that's the whole purpose of the Border Patrol in the eyes of the Biden administration, is to process migrants coming into the country illegally. And another thing to point out, and this actually just dropped today, they've apprehended in the last year or so, it was a FOIA request by Fox News, about 23 people on terror watch lists. And those are only the 23 people that they actually caught. Again, every time you look at a border number, you got to think that there are also gotaways under that same criteria. Again, this is just a mess all around, and we hope the American people are watching. And it's good to see that the media is kind of starting to cover this again after it kind of faded back into the background as inflation, crime, and other things took the forefront.
Website, folks, for FAIR is fairus.org, F-A-I-R-U-S.org. R.J. Holman has been the guest. R.J., thanks. Take care. Good luck, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There it is, folks. Check it out. Listen, Title 42. And listen, this isn't some, it's just right-wingers saying that. No, the government is saying, the Border Patrol, ICE agents, they're saying, folks, when this Title 42 is lifted come May 23rd, you're going to see probably 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 straight days of 20,000 or more people just pile through the border. And again, I get it. People want to come to America for a better life. I get it. I understand that. But we have to do this orderly. And when, and maybe this is an open-ended question, I always put it out there because I want you to think about this. When, as a country, not just the U.S., but when as a country, does a country have the right to say, enough, enough with the illegality, stop. We have a process. I've known people, you've probably known people who've gone through the citizenship process, right? I know a couple of people who are studying for their exams right now. They can't wait to be U.S. citizens, but they did it the right way. They did. But I'm telling you, folks, if you think you're hearing about this now, wait until May 23rd. Unless, because the poll numbers now for the Democrats are just, they're tanking. They're stinking it up in every survey. There are no more outliers here. You just had one from Quinnipiac. You had one from ABC, CBS. If these poll numbers over the next 4, 5, 6 weeks continue to tank, you may hear the White House say, you know what, the heck with the people on the left in our party. We can't lift Title 42 yet. Thanks to R.J. Holman from FAIR, fairus.org. A lot of buzz over the past couple of weeks about a new or a proposed new contract for Connecticut state employees would cover about 46,000 state employees, and numerous departments negotiated with the governor and CBAC, the bargaining coalition. It's been approved by the vast majority, if not all, the union members, but now the General Assembly is kind of sort of peeling back the layers on this one. And the next guest here on the program is one of those doing it. She is the ranking member of the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, the General Assembly. State Rep. Republican Holly Cheeseman, 37th District, representing East Lyme and Salem. And she's been on the program before. Holly, hi. It's Paul again at WICC. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this afternoon, Paul?
Very, very well, Holly. Thank you. Well, I guess you folks today got down and dirty and really started to peel apart, Holly, some of the numbers here and digging into what is in this contract proposal. Give me some of your initial thoughts here, because this has kind of been reported in dribs and drabs. But now that you've eyeballed this, what do you think?
Sure. Well, I think the real straight, skinny on this came out when the nonpartisan Office of Fiscal Analysis, which is basically tasked with the job of figuring out just how much, each piece of legislation is going to cost the state of Connecticut and its taxpayers, came out with its report that said these 37 state employee union contracts would cost the state almost $2 billion over the next 4 years. That's billion with a B, $2 billion. And I'm sorry, I don't care in what universe, $2 billion sounds like a lot of money to me, Paul. And this is on top of, you know, years of what I would term really, really perhaps overly generous deals with our state employee unions, starting with the Roland administration.
You know, Holly, this is one of those issues, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that all you folks in Hartford probably get very polarizing emails and voicemails on this. I mean, all you have to do is look at the comment sections of various news reports, you know, whether it's radio stations, TV stations, web versions of newspapers. You know, on one side you have the, you know, these state employees, they're all loafers, they don't deserve it. And then on the other side, you know, we do deserve it. We were working hard during the pandemic. I would imagine here it's a delicate balancing act, Holly, to basically make, you know, have everybody happy on this, if that's at all possible
but,
or not.
You know, I don't think that is possible. My judge of good legislation is something that has about an equal number of people on both sides voting against.
Exactly.
It, because I figure you've gotten the best deal that you can. And I, you know, there are approximately 46,000 state employees. There are 3.3 million people in Connecticut. The annual cost in raises and bonuses far exceeds the tax relief that the governor's proposed for 3.3 million people. You know, the majority party is always talking about fairness. To me, this is a question of fairness. And is this the best way to reward our state employees, given that the rest of the state is seeing nowhere near this in terms of raises, in terms of health benefits, in terms of pension benefits? It comes down to fairness. And where do we strike that balance?
The governor and his spokesman, Holly Max Reese, came out last week, and I'm paraphrasing here, but they both basically said, yeah, this package is what it is because we are battling private employers. We need to attract good people. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if you read the recent report by Andrew Gibbs, he specializes in analyzing things like this, employee contracts, taking in all the benefits. And his findings, when he looked at all 50 states, that Connecticut state employees received a 33% premium over comparable private sector workers. It's the fifth highest in the country. And as I said, this goes back to the Roland administration. Most states don't allow unions to collectively bargain health and pension benefits. Connecticut does. And they were and are very generous. Now, there have been some tweaks around the corner. But in 2002, Roland guaranteed there would be no changes through 2022. Malloy came in and guaranteed no changes for another 5 years till 2027. And all of these union deals, we didn't take wage increases for a couple of years. They came along with guaranteed no layoffs. And following those zero wage increase years, increases of up to 3.5%, step increases, longevity bonuses, stipends. So I think there is a happy medium, but I don't think this deal has struck a happy medium.
The union has pointed out, Holly, in the days before your hearings today, saying, well, listen, we've stepped up two or three times in the past when the red ink has become too high. We've had givebacks. We've bended under certain things. So don't make us the boogeymen and women here. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you only have to look back to Malloy's first deal, when Daniel Livingston, the chief negotiator for CBAC, said, you know, if you ratify this, you'll have job security that no other state worker in the country has. And I'd venture to say no other private sector workers. And it goes on to say, this is an amazing deal, better than anyone in the country. And I think any private sector worker would have said, when you're in the height of a recession. We won't lay you off for 4 years. You won't get any raises for 2 years, but after that, you're going to get 3.5% and 3.5%. And by the way, we won't change your health care benefits. How many people out there have not had their employer change the amount they pay for their health care? I don't think many people in the private sector can say that.
Finally, Holly, what's going to happen here? Again, I'm reading so many different things and talking to so many different people. Being an election year, do you think the majority party may talk to the governor's office or may talk to people and say, hey, we like the basic framework here, but some of these numbers are a little excessive. Might there be some shaving back on any of this or not?
I would love if that would happen. As we debate policy, and there are so many things that the state would like to fund, be it increased funds for, you know, children's mental health, for child care, we would have that money if we weren't spending it on these, to me, excessive wage awards. And people don't talk about it now. The governor commissioned the Boston Consulting Group to produce something called the CREATES Report, looking at the retiree cliff, how the state does business, how we could increase technology, increase the use of nonprofit providers. And if all the recommendations were implemented, that would save $700 to $800 million a year. What's happened to that report? I guess it's been stuck in a drawer, and instead we're looking at spending $2 billion on keeping the people we were going to save money on when they retired. So,
Holly, how many social workers or teachers or other professionals could we hire with even part of that $700 to $800 million a year? It begs the question.
Exactly. Our child care providers who are operating on thin margins, our nurses who take care of the most critically ill kids at home so they don't have to be in the hospital. That group actually saw wage decrease because they work for the nonprofit sector, not the state. Budgets are a question of priorities. I know where my priorities are.
Well, thank you. State Representative Holly Cheesman, 37th Assembly District. She is the ranking member on the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee of the General Assembly. Holly, good to hear from you again. Thank you. And we'll watch this unfold down the road. Thanks.
We will indeed. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Holly Cheesman there, State Rep, Republican, District 37, which is East Lyme and Salem. But she is the ranking member. That means the top representative from the minority party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, local, national, federal, whatever, on the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. So there you go. Listen, we and I think Holly brought up a good point there. It's not that we don't have the money to spend. How do we spend it? And again, like she said, a good piece of legislation. It's like being a baseball umpire, right? What's the old thing? Well, if you tick off 50% of the people in the stadium, or, 50% of the time, you're doing a pretty good job. Again, and she didn't just single out Democratic governors. She said this all started, and I remember that, with the Roland years, through the rail years as well. Listen, we all value our state employees, but again, it is a question of proportion, as I say in my business here. I'm doing this show at a market in Connecticut, and I could likely do the same show at a bigger market and, you know, frankly, make more money, because that is what portends to drive the market forces in a business. So the question is, you know, what is the just and fair compensation to a state worker here in Connecticut vis-a-vis somebody else across the country?